see the relief on their faces, and she didn't blame them. They were right. The way she'd been feeling lately, it was certainly something to celebrate. So the crowd cheered, and Toad's bloodshot splashed across the room by the cupful, and Mal, in a show of generous sportsmanship, chugged a slimy cup right along with the rest. She circled the party, pilfering a wallet from one of the Gastons, stopping to share a mean giggle with Jenny Gothel about the dress Harriet Hook was wearing, ducking under an overenthusiastic pirate swinging from the chandelier, taking a bite out of someone else's devil dog, and grabbing a mouthful of dry popcorn. She walked into the hallway and bumped into Jay, who was out of breath after winning the latest dance-off. "Having fun?" he asked. She shrugged. "Where'd Carlos go?" Jay laughed and pointed toward a pair of black shoes poking out from behind a sheet covering the biggest of the bookcases. "Hiding from his own party. Typical." Mal knew how Carlos felt, though she'd never admit it. Truly, she'd rather be almost anywhere on the whole aisle than at this party. Like her mother, she hated the sights and sounds of revelry. Fun made her uncomfortable. Laughter? Ugh, gave her hives. But a vendetta was a vendetta. And she had more planned for this evening than just deep, dark secret or death-defying dare. "Come on," said Jay. "They're playing pin the tail on the minion over there. And Jay's has like 10 tails. Let's see if we can make it a dozen." "Maybe in a minute. Where's Princess Blueberry?" Mal asked. "I did a whole loop of this party and I didn't see her anywhere."
"You mean Evie?"
"She's not here yet. Nobody seems to know if she's coming or not." Jay shrugged.
"Castle kids.
She has to come. She's the whole point. She's the only reason I'm even having this stupid party." Mal hated when her evil schemes didn't go exactly as planned. This was the first step in Operation Take Down Evie Queen. Or else. And it had to work. She sighed, staring at the door. Pretending to be having fun at a party when you hated parties was the most tiresome thing in the world. Mal had to agree with her mother on that one.
"What are you two doing?" asked Anthony Tremaine, Lady Tremaine's 16-year-old grandson,
a tall, elegant boy with dark hair swept off a haughty forehead. His clothes were as worn and ragged as everyone else's on the aisle, but somehow, he always looked as if he was wearing custom tailoring. His dark leather coat was cut perfectly, his jeans the right dark wash. Maybe it was because Anthony had noble blood and would probably have lived in Auradon except for his grandmother's being, you know, evil and banished. At one point, he tried to get everyone on the aisle to call him Lord Tremaine, but the villain kids had all just laughed in his face.
"Just talking," said Mal.
"Evil plotting," said Jay. They looked at each other. Something about Anthony's handsome face brought to Mal's mind another handsome boy, the prince from her dream. He said he was her friend. His smile was kind and his voice gentle. Mal shuddered.
"Do you want something?" Mal asked Anthony coolly.
"Yes, to dance." Anthony looked at her expectantly. She looked at him confused.
"Wait, with me?"
Nobody had ever asked her before, but she'd never really been to a party before either.
"Well, I didn't mean him,"
Anthony said, looking awkwardly at Jay.
"No offense, man."
"None taken,"
Jay grinned broadly. Knowing how uncomfortable this made Mal, he found it hilarious. "You two kids go have fun out there. Anthony, make sure you pick a slow song," he said as he slid away. "I have a step-granddaughter waiting for me." Mal could feel her cheeks turning pink, which was embarrassing because she wasn't afraid of anything, least of all dancing with snotty Anthony Tremaine. "So why are you blushing?" she thought.
"I'm not really a dancer," she said lamely. I can show you, he said with a smooth smile. Mal bristled. I don't dance with anyone. Ever.
Why not?
Why not indeed? Mal thought about it. Her mind flashed back to earlier that evening. She'd been getting ready for the party, trying to choose between violet-hued holey or mauve patchwork jeans, when her mother had made a rare appearance at her door.
Where on this dreadful island could you possibly be going? Maleficent asked.
To a party, Mal said. Maleficent let out an exasperated sigh.
Mal, what have I told you about parties?
I'm not going to have fun, Mother. I'm going so I can make someone miserable. She almost wanted to share Operation Evie's scheme right then, but thought better of it. She would tell her mother once she had completed it successfully, lest she disappoint her once more. Maleficent never failed to remind Mal that sometimes it just didn't seem like Mal was evil enough to be her daughter.
At your age, I was cursing entire kingdoms, was a familiar phrase Mal had grown up hearing.
So, you're off to make someone miserable? Her mother cooed.
Wretched, really, enthused Mal.
A slow smile formed on Maleficent's thin red lips. She crossed the room and stood in front of Mal, reaching out to trace a long nail along Mal's cheek. That's nasty, little girl, she said.
Mal swore she saw a glimmer of pride flicker in her mother's cold, emerald-green eyes.
Mal sat back to reality as the band finished a punk rock number with clashing cymbals and a drum roll. Anthony Tremaine was still staring at her.
So, why don't you dance again?
Because I don't have time to dance when I have evil schemes to hatch, Mal wanted to say.
One that will make my mother proud of me. Finally. She turned up her nose.
I don't have to have a reason.
You don't. But that doesn't mean you don't have one.
He caught her by surprise.
Because he was right.
Because she did have a reason. A very good reason to stay clear of any kind of activity that might hint at or lead to romance. Her missing father, otherwise known as he who must not be named in Maleficent's presence. So Anthony had her there. Mal had to give him that. But instead, she glared at him. Then she glared at him again for good measure.
Maybe I just like to be alone.
Because maybe I'm so tired of my mother looking at me like I'm weak just because I came from her own moment of weakness. Because maybe I need to show her that I'm strong enough and evil enough to prove to her that I'm not like my weak human father. That I can be just like her. Maybe I don't want to dance because I don't want to have anything human about me.
That can't be it, Anthony said, picking lint off his jacket. His voice was uncommonly low and pleasant, which once again brought back to Mal's mind the handsome prince by the enchanted lake, except that Anthony wasn't quite as handsome as the boy in her dream had been. Not that she thought that boy handsome, mind you. Not that she thought about him at all.
Nobody likes to be alone.
Well, I do, she insisted.
It was true.
And besides, everybody wants to dance with the Lord, he said smugly.
Nope, not me.
Fine, have it your way, Anthony said, finally backing away. His head held high. In a hot second, he had already asked Harriet Hook to dance, and she'd accepted with a delighted shriek. Mal exhaled.
Phew, boys, dreams, princes. It was all too much for one day.
Mal? Mal? Earth to Mal?
Jay waved a hand in front of her face.
You okay?
Mal nodded but didn't answer. For a moment she had been lost in the memory of that awful dream again. Except that this time it didn't seem so much a dream as a premonition.
that one day she might just find herself in Auradon? But how could that be?
Jay frowned, holding out a cup of cider. Here, it's like you've powered down or something.
Mal realized that she hadn't moved from the front hall. She'd been standing there, stupidly frozen, ever since Anthony had left her side. That was 3 songs ago, and the Bad Apples were playing their current hit, Call Me Never. She perked up, not because of the cider or the catchy song, but because out of the corner of her eye, she spotted Evie through the floor-to-ceiling window in the foyer. She was coming down the road in a brand new rickshaw, her pretty V-braid gleaming in the moonlight. She thinks she's so special. Well, I'll show her, Mal thought. Her eyes wandered over the room and rested upon a familiar-looking door. It was the door that led to Cruella de Vil's storage closet. Mal only knew it was there because she and Carlos had once accidentally come across it when they were working on a skit about evil family trees in 6th grade. And Mal had been bored and had decided to go poking around Hell Hall. Cruella's closet was not for the faint of heart. Mal would never forget that day. It was the kind of closet that would get the best of anyone, especially a princess who was making her way up the steps to the front door and would appear at any moment now.
Jay, she said, motioning to the front door. Let me know when Evie arrives.
Huh? What? Why?
You'll see, she told him.
All part of the evil scheme, huh? He said, happy to do her bidding. Jay was always up for a good prank. But Carlos went white-faced when he saw where Mal was heading.
Don't! He shouted. He took off his sheet, almost tripping over the fabric in an attempt to get to the door before Mal could open it all the way. It slammed shut, just in time. But Mal crossed her arms. She wasn't backing down from this one. It was just too perfect. She glanced out the window again. Princess, oh so fashionably late, was at the front door now. Mal raised her voice.
New game! 7 minutes in heaven. And you've never played 7 minutes if you haven't played it in a de Vil closet.
The words were barely out of Mal's mouth before most of the evil step-granddaughters practically trampled her to get to the door. They loved playing 7 minutes and were enthusiastically wondering with whom they would end up inside. A few of them puckered their lips and powdered their noses while fluttering their eyelashes at Jay, who was stationed by the front door like a sentry.
Who wants to go first? Mal asked.
Me! Me! Me!
Yelped the step-granddaughters.
She does,
Jay called, holding a very recognizable blue cape.
I do? What do I want to do? Asked the cape's owner.
Mal smiled. Evie had arrived.
Evie, sweetie, oh, so glad you can make it, Mal said, throwing her arms theatrically around the girl and giving her a giant fake embrace.
We're playing 7 minutes in heaven. Want to play?
I don't know,
said Evie, looking around the party nervously.
It'll be a scream, said Mal.
Come on. You want to be my friend, don't you? Evie stared at Mal.
You want me to be your friend?
Sure. Why not?
Mal led her to the closet door and opened it. But doesn't a boy go in here with me? Evie asked as Mal shoved her inside the storage room. For someone castle schooled, Evie sure knew her kissing games.
Did I say 7 minutes in heaven?
No, you're playing 7 minutes in hell.
Mal cackled. She couldn't help it. This was going to be so much fun.
The crowd around the hallway had scattered in fear after it was clear. Mal had no interest in having other people join the game, or Evie, inside the locked room.
but Carlos remained standing, his face as white as the tips of his hair. Mal, what are you doing? Playing a dirty trick. What does it look like I'm doing? You can't leave her in there. Remember what happened to us? He asked, motioning angrily to his leg, which had two distinct white scars on the calf. I do, Mal said gleefully. She wondered why Carlos was so concerned about Evie. It wasn't as if they'd been taught to care about other people. But Carlos soon made clear that he wasn't being altruistic. If she's not able to get out on her own, I'm gonna have to clean up the mess, and my mother will freak out. You can't leave her in there, he whispered fiercely, anxiety about Corella's punishment written all over his face. Fine. Go get her, said Mal with a sly smile on her face, knowing full well that he wouldn't. Carlos quaked in his black and white loafers. Mal knew there was nothing he wanted to do less than go back in there again. He remembered all too well what had happened to him and Mal in sixth grade. There was a scream from behind the door. Mal wiped her hands. You want her out? You get her out. Her job was done. Her evil scheme had worked. This was going to be a real howler. Chapter 9. Let the Fur Fly. The first thing Evie thought when the door unceremoniously closed with a bang behind her was that she had worn her prettiest dress for nothing. She had been looking forward to the party all day, had run home to go through every outfit in her closet, holding up dress after dress to see which shade of blue looked best. Azure? Periwinkle? Turquoise? She had settled on a dark, midnight blue lace mini dress and matching high-heeled boots. She'd been extremely late to the party as her mother had insisted on giving her a 3-hour makeover. Not that it mattered, because she was now locked in a closet, alone. She wasn't just imagining it. Mal really was out to get her. Most likely for not having been invited to Evie's birthday party when they were 6 years old. But it wasn't as if it was her fault. Evie'd been just a kid. It had been her mother who hadn't wanted Mal at the party for some reason. Mal couldn't hold it against her. Could she? Evie sighed. Of course she could. Evie still remembered the hurt and anger on 6-year-old Mal's face, looking down from the balcony. Evie supposed that she'd probably feel the same way. Not that she could see it from Mal's point of view or anything. There's no me in empathy, as Mother Gothel liked to say. In the end, Evil Queen probably should have dropped her grudge against Maleficent and invited her daughter to the celebration. It certainly hadn't been fun being cooped up in their castle for 10 years. Evie wasn't even sure why her mother had decided that now was a safe time to leave. But so far, other than Evie being locked in this closet at the moment, nothing too bad had happened. Yet. Besides, the darkness of the closet didn't bother her. Evie was her mother's daughter after all, and used to the horrors of the night, to dark, hidden things with yellow eyes glittering in the shadows, to candles dripping over skull candle holders, to the flash of lightning and the fury of thunder as they rolled across the sky. She wasn't scared. She wasn't scared in the least bit. Except her foot just struck something hard and cold. And the quiet of the closet was broken by the loud, echoing snap of steel meeting steel. She screamed, "What was that?" When her eyes adjusted to the dim light, she saw fur traps littered all over the floor, lying in wait for the next animal to wander through. There were so many of them that one wrong step would mean a trap would snap her leg in two. She turned back to the door and tried to open it. But it was no use. She She was locked in there.
Help! Help! Let me out!
She yelled. But there was no answer, and the band was playing so loudly, Evie knew no one would hear her, nor care. It was hard to see, so Evie felt her way tentatively in the darkness, sliding her left foot on the floor first. How many were there? 10? 20? 100? And how big was this room anyway? Her foot came in contact with something cold and heavy, so she retreated. How was she gonna get out of this place without losing a limb? Was there another door on the other side, maybe? She squinted. Yes, that was another door. There was a way out. She headed slowly to the far end, the floorboards creaking ominously under her feet. Evie shifted to her right, hoping to avoid the trap to move around it, but her foot struck another, and she jumped back as it too snapped shut with a bang, springing into the air and barely grazing her knee. Her heart thundered in her chest as she slid around the next trap, careful not to strike the metal for fear that it might close around her ankle. As long as she missed the trap center, she would be good. She could do this. All she had to do was move slowly and carefully. She edged around another one. She was getting better at this. She could find her way to the back of the room and possibly another door. She cleared one, and then another, moving more quickly, sliding one foot in front of the other, searching for and avoiding the traps. Faster, a little faster. The door must be close. Then she struck a trap and it suddenly popped up with a snap. She jumped away, and as the trap fell on the floor, it hit another trap, which sprang up and hit the one next to it, all in succession. And this time, Evie saw that she couldn't move slowly, but that she had to run. The chorus of snapping metal jaws rang through the darkness, steel blades against steel blades, as she ran screaming toward the back door. The trap slammed shut, bam, 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 one after another, one a hairbreadth away from her stocking, while another almost caught her heel as she turned the door handle, left the room, and shut the door behind her. But just as she thought she was safe, she realized she had plunged right into a dark, furry presence. Was it a bear? A horrible, shaggy monster? Had she gotten out of the frying pan only to fall into the fire? Evie twisted and turned, but only succeeded in wrapping herself deeper in fur. Dense, thick, woolly fur. With two armholes? This was no bear. No monster. She was trapped in a fur coat. Evie tried to shake it off, tried to shrug it off her shoulders, but she was smack dab in the middle of dozens of coats, all of them black or white or black and white, made of the thickest, luscious hides. There were spotted ocelot and dip-dyed mink, silky sable and shiny skunk, all of them packed in like sardines, so full, so fluffy, so thick. This was Cruella de Vil's fur closet, her wondrous collection, her obsession, her greatest weakness. And those fur traps back there were her security system, just in case anyone got too close to the stuff. Evie finally managed to untangle herself and push aside the wall of fur, just as a hand grasped her wrist and pulled her through to the other side. You okay? It was Carlos. Evie took a deep breath. Yes. I think so. Do I win the game? She asked dryly. Carlos laughed. Mal's going to be annoyed you survived. Where are we? Evie looked around. There was a lumpy mattress on the floor, next to an ironing board and a wash basin, along with a vanity table that held dozens of white and black wigs. When Carlos looked embarrassed, she realized it was his bedroom. Cruella's fur closet opened onto a dressing room, where her son slept. Oh, Carla shrugged. It's home. Even if her mother annoyed her sometimes, at least Evil Queen was obsessed with Evie's good looks, and even when she wasn't worried that perhaps Evie might not be the fairest of them all, she treated her daughter like the princess she was. Evie's room might be dark and musty, but she had a real bed, not a makeshift one, with a thick blanket and relatively soft pillows. It's not so bad in here, really, Evie said. I'm sure it's cozy and, hey, you'll never catch a cold. You can just use one of her fur coats for a blanket, right? It was awfully drafty in the room, like her own home. Hell Hall wasn't insulated for winter. Carlo shook his head. I'm not allowed to touch them, he said, trying to put the furs back in order. They were so heavy and there were so many of them. I'll fix them later. She doesn't come back till Sunday. Evie nodded. This is all my mother's fault. If she hadn't tried to challenge Maleficent's leadership when they first came to the Isle, none of this would have happened. Your mother actually challenged Maleficent? Carlos goggled. It was unheard of. Well, she is a queen, after all, Evie pointed out. Yeah, she was angry that everyone on the island decided to follow Maleficent instead of her. She walked over to the vanity and began to fix her makeup, delicately powdering her nose and applying pink gloss to her full rosebud lips. And now, here we are. Mal will get over it, he said hopefully. Are you kidding? A grudge is a grudge is a grudge. She'll never forgive me. Didn't you listen in selfie class? I thought you were so smart. Evie smiled wryly. Oh well, I should just face it. Go back to our castle and never come out. But you're not, right? No, I guess not. Evie put away her compact. Hey, she said softly. I have an old comforter I never use. I mean, if you get cold and you can't... Oh, never mind. She never had any siblings, so she had no idea what having a little brother would be like. But if Evil Queen had ever stopped looking at herself in the mirror long enough to have another kid, Evie thought it would be tolerable to have a little brother like Carlos. Carlos looked as if he didn't know what to say. Forget I said anything, Evie said in a rush. No, bring it. I mean, no one's ever cared whether I'm warm or not, he said, blushing red as his voice trailed off. Not that you care, of course. I certainly don't, agreed Evie. Caring was definitely against the rules at Dragon Hall, and could turn anyone into a laughing stock. We were gonna throw it out. Excellent. Just consider my home your dumpster. Okay. Do you think you might have a pillow you were going to toss out, too? I've never had a pillow. Carlos turned red again. I mean, I've had tons of pillows, of course. So many. We have to keep throwing them away. I get so many pillows. I mean, who's never had a pillow in their life? That's preposterous. Yeah, I think we were going to throw away a pillow, Evie said, turning just as red as Carlos, even as a warm, sunny sensation had taken over her chest. She changed the subject. Still working on that machine of yours? Yeah, wanna see? He asked. Yeah, sure, Evie replied, following Carlos down the spiral staircase that led to the back of the house away from the party. Carlos slipped outside, holding the door open for Evie. Where are we going? To my lab, Carlos replied, pulling out a matchbook and lighting a candle to lead the way into the weedy backyard. Your what? My science lab. Don't worry, I don't, like, sacrifice toads or something. Evie let out a hesitant laugh. They approached a huge, gnarled tree with a rope ladder. Carlos started climbing up it. I have to keep it all in my treehouse. I'm afraid my mom is going to get some big ideas and turn my chemicals into makeup and hair products.
Evie scrambled up the ladder behind him. The treehouse was more elaborate than any she'd ever seen, with miniature turrets and a tiny balcony that looked out onto the dark forest below. Inside, Evie spun around, gaping. The walls were lined with shelves of glass beakers, vials, and jars containing various neon-colored liquids. In the corner sat a small, old television with about 15 different antennas strapped to it.
"What is all this?" Evie asked, picking up a jar of something white and snowy.
"Oh, that's from ChemLab. It's sodium polyacrylate. I was trying to see if I could use it as a sponge when mixed with water," Carlo said. "But here, this is what I wanted to show you." He pulled out the wire box contraption he'd been working on in class.
"I think I got the battery to work."
Carlos fiddled with a few buttons and flicked a few switches. It sputtered to life and then died. His face fell. He tried again. This time, it emitted a high-pitched squeal before dying. He looked up at Evie sheepishly.
"Sorry. I thought I had it."
Evie looked at the black box.
"Maybe try connecting this wire to that one?" she suggested.
Carlos peered at the wires.
"You're right. They're in the wrong place."
He switched the wires and hit the switch. A powerful electric burst shot out of the box, sending Carlos and Evie flying back against the wall and falling to the floor. The beam of light burst up toward the plywood ceiling, blasting a hole in the treehouse roof and up to the sky.
"Maleficent!" Carlos cursed.
"Oh my goblins!"
Evie screamed. "What just happened?"
They both scrambled out onto the treehouse balcony and stared up at the sky, where the light was streaking all the way up, through the clouds, up, 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 all the way to the dome. The light seared through the barrier as easily as it had burned a hole in the treehouse roof. Lightning flashed, and the very earth shook with a supersonic rumble. For a second, they could see through the crystal dome and directly into the night sky. The black box began to emit a strange beeping noise. Carlos and Evie scrambled back inside, and Carlos picked up the box. It was making a sound neither of them had ever heard before. And for a brief moment, there was something on the television in the room which had burst to life all of a sudden.
"Look!"
Evie cried. The screen was flashing with so many different scenes it was dizzying. For a moment they saw a talking dog. Carlos screamed at the sight. Then it switched to a pair of twins who were nothing alike. One was boyish and athletic and the other was sort of a diva. They both sort of looked like Mal, except with yellow hair. Then it switched again to two teenage boys who seemed to be running a hospital for superheroes.
"Look at all these different television shows," Carlos said.
"I knew it! I knew it! I knew there had to be other kinds!" Evie laughed. Then the screen flickered and went dark again, and the box in Carlos's hands went dead.
"What happened?"
"I don't know. I think maybe it worked. Penetrated the dome for a second, didn't it?" he asked, approaching the box fearfully and touching it with the end of one finger. It was hot to the touch, and he pulled his hand away quickly.
"It must have," Evie said. "That's the only explanation."
"Promise you won't tell anyone about what happened, especially about the dome. We could get in real trouble, you know."
"I promise," said Evie,
making an X with her fingers behind her back.
"Good. You want to go back to the party?"
"Do we have to?" she asked, unwilling to find herself trapped in another closet.
"You have a point. And that show you like on Oradon News Network, the one that features the Prince of the Week, is going to be on in 5 minutes.
Excellent." Unbeknown to the two villain children, far off in the distance, deep in the heart of the Forbidden Fortress, hidden behind a gray, misty fog on the other side of the island,
A long black scepter with a jewel on its end came back to life, glowing green with power again. The most powerful weapon of darkness had been awakened for a moment. Next to the hidden staff, a stone statue of a raven began to vibrate, and when the bird began to shake its wings, the stone crumbled into dust, and in its place was that black-eyed fiend, that wicked fairy's familiar, the one and only Diablo, Maleficent's best and first friend. Diablo shook his feathers and gave a throaty, triumphant cry. Evil would fly again. Evil. Chapter 10. Council of Sidekicks. Ben nervously fiddled with the beast head ring on his finger as he waited for the council to take their seats around the king's conference table later that morning. His father's advice rang in his ear. Keep a strong hand. Show 'em who's king. He flexed his own fingers, thinking of his father's fist. His father didn't mean it literally, but Ben was worried nonetheless. He supposed he would just have to improvise. Ready, sire? Lumiere asked. Ben took a breath and tried to sound as serious as possible. Yes. Let them in. Thank you. Lumiere bowed. Even though it had been a long time since he had been enchanted and turned into a candelabrum, there was something about him that still resembled one. And for a moment, Ben could easily imagine two small flames flickering on his outstretched palms. Lumiere knows who he is, and he's happy being Lumiere. Is it really so much more complicated to be a king than a candelabrum? The thought was, for a moment, comforting to Ben. But then the council entered the room, and he found there was nothing comforting about the sudden sight of the royal advisors. In fact, they're pretty terrifying, Ben thought. He didn't know why. They were chatting amiably enough, discussing last night's tourney scores and whose fantasy tourney league was winning. Seats were taken, gossip exchanged, goblets of spice cider passed around, as well as a plate or two of the castle kitchen's sugar cookies. Representing the sidekicks were the usual seven dwarves, still wearing their mining clothes and stocking hats. Seated next to the dwarves, or rather, sitting along the edge of a book of Oradon's civic rules and regulations that lay on the table nearest them, because they were much too small to take any seat at all, were the very same mice who had helped Cinderella win her prince. Wily Jack, Chubby Gus, and Sweet Mary. The rodent portion of the advisory board tended to speak in small, squeaky tones that could be hard to understand, Lumiere had warned, but they also had great belly laughs that were usually contagious. Beyond the mice, a few of Ariel's sisters, Ben could never remember which, especially as their names all started with A, and Flounder splashed along in their own copper bathtub, wheeled in by a very unhappy Cogsworth, who grimaced every time the slightest bit of water sloshed over the edge. Mind the splashing, please. I only just had this floor mopped. You do know this isn't a beach resort, do you not? Precisely. It's a council meeting. A royal council, the former clock trumpeted, rolling his R's with great fanfare. Andrina, or was it Adela, only laughed and flicked him with her great wet fins. Rounding out the other side of the table were the three good fairies, Flora, Fauna, and Merryweather, looking apple-cheeked and cheery in their green, red, and blue hats and capes, seated next to the famed Blue Genie of Agrabah. They were comparing vacation notes. The fairies were partial to the forest meadows, while the genie preferred the vast deserts.
I guess we should get started, Ben ventured, clearing his throat.
No one seemed to hear him. The mice roared with laughter, falling onto their backs and rolling across the Oradonian law book.
Even Pongo and Perdita of the freed DeVille Dalmatian contingent joined in the laughter, with a little lively barking. All told, it was a friendly group, or so it seemed. Ben began to relax. And why shouldn't he? Unlike the infamous villains trapped on the Isle of the Lost, the good citizens of Auradon looked as if the last 20 years hadn't aged them one bit. Ben had to admit, every one of the royal counselors looked just like they had in the photographs he had studied of the founding of Auradon. The mice were still small and cute, the Dalmatians sleek and handsome. The mermaids, whatever their names, remained as fresh as water lilies, and the good fairies burst with good health. Even the infamous genie of Agrabah had toned down his usual hypermanic performance. Dopey was still his mute, charming self, and while Doc may have had a few more white hairs than before in his beard, Grumpy looked almost cheerful. Except for one thing.
What? No cream cakes?
Grumpy grabbed a sugar cookie, glaring at the plate. It's a meeting, not a party, Doc said, harumphing.
Well, it's certainly not a party now,
Grumpy said, examining a cookie.
There isn't even a currant or a chocolate chip. What, are we discussing budget problems today?
As I was saying, Ben interrupted, moving the plate of cookies away from Grumpy. Welcome, everyone. I hereby declare this meeting of the King's Council officially open. Shall we begin? Asked Ben. Heads nodded around the table. Ben glanced down at the note cards he had hidden beneath his right hand. Hopefully he was doing this correctly. He coughed.
Excellent. Well then. Don't we need to wait for your dad, kid?
Jeannie asked, putting his feet up on the table. Now that magic was discouraged in Auradon, the genie had taken physical form and was no longer a floating cloud.
Yeah, where's King Beast?
Flounder piped up.
Isn't your father joining us today, Ben?
Perdita asked, gently. Color crept into Ben's face.
No, sorry. My dad, King Beast, has, asked me to run the meeting this morning.
Everyone stared. The mice sat up. Grumpy let the cookie drop.
Anyway,
Ben cleared his throat and tried to affect a confidence he did not feel.
On to business,
he was stalling. He looked at the stack of papers in front of him, petitions and letters and applications and motions from sidekicks from every corner of the kingdom. Show them who is king. That's what my father said. He tried again. In my role as future king of Auradon, I've studied your petitions, and while I appreciate your suggestions, I'm afraid that...
Our petitions?
Are you talking about the Sidekicks Act?
Grumpy sounded annoyed.
Yes. I'm afraid that we cannot recommend granting these petitions as...
Who's we? Asked Mary. Dopey looked confused.
I mean me? What I mean to say is, I've taken your suggestions for change, but it doesn't look like they can be approved as...
One of the mermaids tilted her head.
Not approved? Why not?
Ben became flustered.
Well, because I...
Doc shook his head. I'm sorry, son, but have you ever set foot outside this castle? What do you know about the whole kingdom? For instance... Our goblin cousins on the Isle of the Lost would like forgiveness. They've been exiled for a long time. All around the table, the counselors began to murmur in low tones. Ben knew the meeting had taken a turn for the worse, and he desperately began to review his options. There was nothing on his note cards about what to do in the case of council revolt. One, what would my dad do? Two, what would my mom do? Three, could I run for it? What would that do?
Ben was still evaluating option number three when Grumpy spoke up. If I may interrupt, Grumpy said, looking the exact opposite of, well, Mary, who sat next to him. As you know, for 20 years, we dwarves have worked the mines, gathering jewels and diamonds for the kingdom's crowns and scepters.
for many a prince and princess in need of wedding gifts or coronation attire. Ben turned even redder, looking at the polished gold buttons on his own shirt. Grumpy glared at him pointedly, then continued. And for 20 years, we have been paid zilch for our efforts.
Now, Mr. Grumpy, said Ben.
Sir, it's just Grumpy,
huffed Grumpy.
Ben looked at the mice.
May I?
Be my guest, said Gus, hopping down. Ben pulled the Oridon law book free from beneath the mice, sending a few rodents rolling. He turned to a chart and the appendices at the back of the thick book. Okay, then, Grumpy, as a citizen of Oridon, it looks like you and the rest of the dwarves have been granted 2-month vacations, 20 holidays, and unlimited sick days. He looked up. Does that sound right?
More or less, Doc said.
Grumpy folded his arms with another glare. Ben looked relieved, closing the book.
So, you can't say you've been working for exactly 20 years, can you?
The math is beside the point, young man. Or should I call you young beast?
Grumpy shouted from behind Doc, who was doing his best to shove his own stocking cap into Grumpy's mouth.
Prince Ben will do,
Ben said with a thin smile. No wonder the dwarf was called Grumpy. Ben had never met such a cantankerous person.
If I can interject, and I don't mean to offend, but we're a bit tired of being without a voice and without a contract.
Bashful spoke up. At least Ben thought that was his name, if only from how red he turned as he spoke.
You're here now, aren't you? I don't believe you can call that being without a voice, can you?
Ben smiled again. 2 for 2.
Boom.
Maybe I'm better at this king stuff than I thought. But what will happen to our families when we retire?
Bashful asked, not looking convinced.
I'm sure my father has a plan to take care of everyone, Ben said, hoping it was true.
A voice squeaked up from the table. Ben leaned forward to listen. And has anyone noticed that we sidekicks do all the work in this kingdom? Since the fairy godmother frowns on magic, we mice make all the dresses, Mary said indignantly. The little mouse had climbed back up on the law book to make herself heard.
By Paul.
That's very, Ben began. But he was cut off. He was no longer in charge of the room. That much was clear.
Not to mention the woodland creatures who do all the housekeeping for Snow White, added Jack. They aren't too happy about it either.
Mary nodded.
Plus, Snow White needs a whole new wardrobe as she's reporting on the coronation soon. Your coronation, I might add.
Ben searched desperately through the papers in front of him. Every citizen has the right to file a...
I still collect everything for Ariel, burbled Flounder. Her treasures have grown, but what do I have to show for any of it?
Ben tried again.
You have the knowledge that what you do is very much appreciated, Flounder kept going. And the mermaids give undersea tours all year round without taking a penny. Even in the busy season.
Ariel's sisters nodded indignantly, their shimmering tails splashing water all over the table from the bathtub. Cogsworth slapped a hand over his eyes, while Lumiere squeezed his arm in support. Ben nodded.
Well, that is certainly something worth further consider. And if I might add,
living without magic has taken a toll on our nerves, sighed Merryweather.
Flora can't sew. Fauna can't bake, and I can't clean without our wands. You'll find our petition at the end there, dear boy.
Flora shoved it into Prince Ben's face, and he sat back in his chair, surprised.
Fauna chimed in. While we appreciate all that the fairy godmother has done, we can't see why just a little magic might not be useful.
But is there really any such thing as a little, Ben began.
Pongo sat up. And not to sound weary, but Purdy and I are a bit fatigued after caring for 101 Dalmatians, said Pongo in that rich, elegant voice of his. If there were only 101 hours in the day, Purdy yawned, I could at least sleep for 5 of them. Imagine that.
Mary, the mouse, nodded sympathetically, patting Purdy's paw with her own.
a blur of blue appeared in Ben's face.
To put it bluntly, Prince Ben, this blows, said Jeannie, who blew him a mocking kiss. The dwarves applauded wildly.
Ariel's sisters tittered, and now the water in the tub was roiling like a small tsunami. Cogsworth left the chamber in a huff, and even Lumiere motioned for Prince Ben to cut the meeting short. If only Ben knew how. The room began to dissolve into absolute chaos, as the sidekicks and dwarves began to shout at one another, while the good fairies kept on complaining about the back-breaking work even ordinary chores now entailed, and all the rest of the company advocated for relief from their own grievances. It was hard to pick out one from the next, Ben thought, as he slunk down in his chair, trying not to panic. Breathe, he told himself. Breathe and think. But it was impossible to think amid the ruckus in the room. The mermaids complained that the tourists left their trash everywhere. The dwarves whined that no one liked to whistle while they worked anymore. Pongo and Perdita talked about the stress of having to pay for 101 college educations. And even the genie looked bluer than usual. Ben covered his ears. This wasn't a meeting anymore. It was an all-out brawl. He had to shut it down. Before people started throwing things. Or mice. What would my father do? What does he expect me to do? How could he put me in this situation and expect me to know what to do? The more he thought about it, the angrier he got. Finally, Ben stood up. No one cared. He climbed on top of his chair. And still, nobody noticed him. That's it. His father told him to be kingly, and kings were heard. Enough! He yelled from the top of the table. This meeting is adjourned! A shocked silence filled the room. Ben just stood there. Why, I never, said Purdy. How rude to speak to us in such a way. Impertinent and ungrateful, that's for certain. Sniffed Flora. Why, that does it, said Grumpy. Where's King Beast? We're not deaf. Don't you know your manners, son? My word, we've never been treated so poorly, Meriwether fluttered. The dwarves and sidekicks left the room, shooting Ben wary glances as they filed out. The mermaids huffed and made a point of sloshing water on the floor, as Lumiere was left to drag them away, shaking his head. The mice turned their noses up as they walked past without so much as a squeak. The Dalmatians held their tails high, and even Dopey gave the prince a silent, hurt look. Ben hung his head, embarrassed by his actions. He had tried to lead like his father. And he had failed. He hadn't been able to table the petition. And he hadn't been able to inspire confidence in the king's council. If anything, he had made the situation worse. Which is why I would make a terrible king, Ben thought, as he climbed down from his father's council room table. He hadn't proven himself. He'd only proven one thing. That Prince Ben wasn't fit to wear the royal beast head ring that was currently on his finger. Chapter 11. Evil Lives? Mal was standing alone in the corner, nursing her spiked cider, when she noticed two figures trying to sneak their way toward the buffet table to grab a couple of cans of expired sodas. It was Carlos, of course, and Princess Blueberry. Evie didn't look any worse for wear after spending time in the Cruella's closet. She wasn't even bleeding. There wasn't a scratch on her, or even a run in her stocking. Ugh. Carlos must have helped her somehow. The ungrateful little twerp. Mal sighed. Foiled again. Just like her mother, whose own curse had failed. Were they destined for failure forever? This party was a bust. It was definitely time to go. Even the evil step-granddaughters looked tired of pretending to hate being chased by the rowdy pirates.
Mel tossed her empty cider cup on the floor and left without a backward glance. She spent the night rearranging her neighbor's overgrown lawns, swapping lawn mowers, mailboxes, and outdoor furniture. She amused herself doing some light redecorating by toilet papering a couple of houses and egging a few rickshaws. Nothing like a little property damage to make her feel better. She left her mark on each house with the message, "Evil lives," spray-painted on the lawn, to remind the island people exactly what they stood for and what they had to be proud of. Feeling as if she had salvaged the evening, it was with some surprise and not a little shock that when she rolled home to the Bargain Castle, she found her mother awake and awaiting her. "Mother!" Mel yelped, startled to see Maleficent sitting on her huge, high-backed green chair in front of the stained-glass window. It was her throne, as it were, her seat of darkness.